After mounting opposition to a non-binding referendum on reforming the Honduran constitution, the military forcibly removed the president of Honduras, Manuel Zelaya, from power on June 28th. After the coup was executed, Zelaya was arrested and flown to Costa Rica by the Honduran military. The leader installed by the coup makers, Roberto Micheletti, insisted that the removal of the elected president at gunpoint was legal and justified the coup by declaring that Zelaya had broken Honduran law by proceeding with the referendum despite a Supreme Court ruling. Critics of Zelaya's progressive economic policies feared that he would use constitutional reforms to extend his term in office, which is due to end in January 2010. Nations around the world, including the United States, condemned the coup, with the Organization of American States initiating negotiations to restore Zelaya to power. When their efforts failed, OAS members voted unanimously to suspend Honduras from the Hemispheric Organization, which now faces trade sanctions and the loss of loans and aid. On July 5th, Zelaya's attempt to fly back to Honduras was thwarted by the military when they blocked the runway at the Tegucigalpa airport. Soldiers prevented thousands of pro-Zelaya protesters from entering the airport and shot into the crowd, killing at least one activist and injuring dozens. Zelaya's supporters vowed to ratchet up their protests with strikes and by blockading the nation's main highways. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Laura Carlson, director of the Center for International Policy's Americas program based in Mexico City, who examines the events which led to the coup and what role, if any, Washington played in the ouster of President Zelaya.
Mel Zelaya, the president, was elected as a center candidate, and then he fairly soon after his election began to move more toward the left, and particularly to positions that involved, in some ways, redistributing the wealth and having more social programs for the vast majority of the population in Honduras that lives in poverty. Honduras is the third poorest country in the region, and their estimates run from 50 to 70% of the population living in poverty, with over 40% living on less than $2 a day. This explains, too, why there's so many immigrants from Honduras to the United States, because it's just very, very difficult to even make a living there. And the president began to raise minimum wage and carry out other types of programs that infuriated the business class, which is typically, like many of these countries, run by a very small number of very wealthy families. So as he grew further and further away from this political class that included, as we saw in the coup, the Congress and the courts, he grew closer and closer to the grassroots organizations of peasant farmers and labor unions and indigenous peoples throughout the country. And we began to see an even sharper polarization in the country as they realized that they couldn't control a president who was no longer serving their interests. The catalyst for this coup began several days before he was actually kidnapped, when the president announced that he would be carrying out a nationwide survey, basically. It's a non-binding referendum that only said, do you agree to place a fourth urn in the elections in November on calling a constitutional assembly? It said nothing about changing term limits. It said nothing about specific proposals for changing the constitution. So the courts immediately had already ruled that this referendum, or this survey actually, was illegal, and the Congress ruled that it was illegal. In fact, they passed a law to make it illegal. The president was following a previously existing law that validated this type of consultation to the people. So there was a conflict between, obviously, the three powers, and all of them were claiming that they had legal and constitutional rights to back up their positions, and it was fairly complicated in that sense. However, the Organization of American States began to hear rumors of a coup before it happened and quickly stepped in to say this would not be acceptable and look for a solution to some of the conflicts that were happening. Many of us thought that that would stave off any type of violent action, but lo and behold, on June 28th, the day that the survey was to be carried out, the president was kidnapped at 5 o'clock in the morning from the presidential residence in his pajamas, flown in an Air Force jet to Costa Rica, and the army blocked carrying out in most places this non-binding referendum.
Laura, I wanted to ask you about any fingerprints from Washington that could be detected here in either foreknowledge of the coup or other maybe covert support for the coup, either with President Obama's knowledge or without, that you have detected here.
What some people say is that the very fact that the coup happened and that the United States, as well as other countries, but in particular the United States, was involved in dialogue before the coup happened, is evidence that the United States supported it. Their argument runs that the United States has so much power in this small, very poor country, both historically and because of the dependence of Honduras on the U.S. economy, for its own economy, that if they had been serious about stopping this coup, they could have, because the coup leaders wouldn't dare to do it if the United States, in those discussions beforehand, had been firm about it. I don't find this to be a completely convincing argument. For one thing, it's not real evidence. And I think in these things we have to be looking at evidence, because you can always speculate. And the other thing is, most people were surprised that they actually carried this out. And their attitude since then has indicated that this is a group of people that has thrown all caution to the wind and decided that they're going to do this no matter what the international community does, no matter what the United States does, and no matter what the Organization of American States and the European Union and almost, like I say, every other country in the world does. There's been talk from the beginning, especially by the Venezuelan government, of the involvement of former U.S. diplomats, in particular Otto Reich, a very conservative former State Department person under the Bush administration and others, as part now of non-governmental organizations. It will be a big challenge for many of us who work in investigative journalism or analysis to begin to sort this out and to see what some of these so-called democracy promotion programs are doing in the hemisphere. And although we don't have any evidence of this yet, I would say that it's possible that there is that kind of involvement. It's, of course, certainly worth investigating and finding out as much as anyone possibly can about the lead-up and how this group of people became so confident as to carry out an act like this in the 21st century.
That was Laura Carlson, director of the Center for International Policy's Americas program, based in Mexico City. Contact the center by calling area code 202-232-3317 or visit their website at americaspolicy.org.